In a continuation of a series of interviews with creative and caring millennials of the Upper Midwest, professional cellist Rosa Thompson Vieira of St. Paul, Minnesota, describes her musical journey from early childhood to now playing the cello for a living. A member of the Rochester Symphony in Rochester, Minnesota, and freelance performer, Rosa's story is one of a love of musical performance and determination to survive in an oftentimes tumultuous economic and professional environment. What follows is about a 45-minute virtual conversation we had early in the summer of 2020. And now, Rosa Thompson Vieira. Hey, Rosa.
Hi, John.
Hi, Rosa Thompson Vieira, right? Is that right?
Yes,
that's right. Did I say your name right? Okay. This is thinking it through, my little effort to talk to people about their personal stories and things. So I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah. Excited to be here.
Yeah. And Rosa, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a freelance cellist and teacher. I'm actually also a student currently. I'm in grad school at the University of Minnesota for a master's in cello performance. Currently, with the whole state of the world, I am, you know, still doing school, still doing a little bit of teaching online, but unfortunately the playing part of things, all my gigs have sort of been put on hold.
Yeah, the performance end of things. And is that, you actually as a cellist, and we'll get into it here, you're doing a variety of things. I'm kind of curious, just off the top here, if you could just wave a magic wand, make the pandemic disappear, and just do whatever you wanted to do, what would it be? Would it be teaching? Would it be performing? Would it be in academia? What?
At this point, I think what I would enjoy most is just kind of what I'm currently doing, which is a lot of different things. I kind of can't imagine, you know, like not teaching, not playing in like a variety of different settings. And most musicians today who are kind of, you know, successful, like no one really just plays in an orchestra, you know, it's piecing a lot of different things together. So, you know, the teaching aspect is kind of the steady income.
Right.
The performing, I would say maybe I'm a little bit more passionate about, but you know, I mean, I kind of really just imagine myself doing it all. So that's part of the fun too. I like kind of doing lots of different things. It keeps me motivated, keeps life exciting.
How many years have you been doing kind of it all, like teaching, a little performing? How many years have you been doing that?
So I graduated from my undergrad in spring of 2015 from the U of M. And I actually, right after graduation, I ended up working. I was kind of like, oh my God, I need a job. Like, you know, I need to pay my bills. At the time I was living with my parents, but I was like, okay, I need to move out as soon as possible. So my sister-in-law was opening an in-home daycare, and I actually worked full time with her right out of college for about 9 months. And then that's when I first started teaching. So I started weaning off of the daycare job. I started teaching part-time. And then eventually I was like, okay, I really need to get back to doing what I love. And then I kind of eventually took that leap and made it to full-time freelancing. So.
Right. And obviously, you know, like you said before, we're kind of hit with this pandemic right now. Hopefully things will come back for you. I know it's particularly stressful, especially people that are trying to cobble together a number of gigs and things. So, Yeah. Well, I think it will. Before we get into stuff, I'm really fascinated with music and creativity and the things that are passionate to artists like yourself. So I'd like to maybe drop into your past if you can. If you can kind of think about why it is that you got interested in music or the cello, can you tell us a little bit about maybe your family?
So I first started playing the cello in first grade, actually. And it's because of the school that I went to was a K through eight fine arts school, which is it actually no longer exists, sadly. But I really, really kind of attest my musical roots to that school I went to. It was Ramsey International Fine Arts Center at the time on 50th and Nicollet. And yeah, I started playing the cello in first grade, and I played in a kind of a small orchestra, and then I eventually moved on to private lessons starting in third grade. The music program was pretty amazing at the time.
Is it a part of the family story that Rosa would be music? You were humming things as a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old? I
Well,
don't
I
know.
mean,
Are
my
you?
so my family, no one is really a musician themselves, but my parents are definitely music lovers, so that had a lot to do with it too. I mean, I grew up going to lots of concerts and seeing lots of music and seeing lots of art. So they were definitely huge supporters. The school actually required everyone to start an instrument in first grade. So I knew that they were, my sister and my brother, they all tried different instruments as well, but nothing really stuck for them. So, but yeah, for me, it
Why'd you pick the cello?
Oh
Do you
gosh.
have any, I mean, as a first grader, I don't know what kind of decision making you're making,
Right. Honestly, I have no distinct
but
memory of like choosing the cello in particular. I'm assuming maybe one of my teachers like suggested it to me, and I,
it sounded like Jello or something.
yeah. Yeah. I think, I'm assuming that violin was kind of the popular choice because usually it is. Well, that's kind of changing now. But yeah, I really don't know. I have no memory of choosing the cello, but I'm glad I did.
And when you're in first grade, how big are the cellos? Was that bigger than you?
So yeah, they have quarter size cellos, they have half
Oh, okay.
cellos, they have three quarter size cellos. So I
I
was
see.
a little itty bitty cello at the time.
And they began teaching you how to even sit with it, right? How to even put it between
Yeah.
your legs and turn your ankles, or I don't know what you had to do, but
In fact, I believe before we even got the instruments, we were learning on like cardboard boxes. I do have like a faint memory of that. So, yeah, it takes a little while to have the privilege of even holding the instrument itself.
Now, do you remember when you were a young kid and going to some performances and actually after you started playing the cello, going and seeing cello players?
Yeah, I think, kind of one of my earliest distinct memories is actually going to see my first private teacher. Her name was Jeannie Trellis, and she was a student at the U of M actually at the time. And I went to see one of her recitals at the U. And I think I took a journal with me, and I was apparently writing in my journal at the time. And I have looked back on that journal entry, and I, was writing like, I am so amazed at Jeannie. Like, I want to be like Jeannie one day. I was just like completely blown away, and I was like, I want to do that. I want to get that good.
So you weren't by any means intimidated by playing something in public at all. You didn't go, geez, I would like to play that, but I don't want to play it for my mom and dad or
I mean,
whatever.
maybe because I was still so young, and that was far away in my brain. I wasn't even considering that part of it, but but it is interesting because I was a very shy kid. So yeah, I don't know. It's weird how that worked out, but maybe, I think looking back, it's something that boosted my confidence overall because I was, it was scary, but I was good at it, and I knew I was good at it, and I enjoyed it, and so that combination of things made me feel really good about myself because I knew I was doing something that was both scary but also exciting and fun.
So when you talk about having some kind of notion as to how good you were? Is it because your fingers could move fast and you could hit the right tones? I mean, what is it that made you feel like?
Yeah, I mean, good at it? I mean, pretty early on, you know, when you're in a group class with other kids, I think I just noticed that I was picking things up a lot faster than
sure
around me. So yeah.
Did you practice when you were small? When you were in grade school?
I think I did.
I'm asking you to go way back here. Yeah.
Practicing is still, it's still always to an extent going to be like work and going to feel like work still to the day, you know, it's like, right. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my parents kind of had certain expectations of me, and I think I, for the most part, followed through and kept up a kind of a regular routine with it. So that definitely helped.
Right, right. And then you had public performances as a youngster, right, up through middle school. You did have, like, the parents would show up twice a year, three times a year, whatever, to listen to you.
Yeah, our school put on orchestra performances, yeah. And then, you know, eventually as I got a little bit older, I started doing like recitals and things.
Huh? What about just the social end of things? Like when you were a kid in band and orchestra, did you have buddies and friends and things that made it fun to be in that, or were you kind of in your own head?
No, I did. I had actually one of my best friends, my oldest friends, Rachel. She's, you know, still in my life today, and we were like besties in first grade. She's she played cello, so she was in the section with me. There's also another person, Tom, who was we were kind of always paired together. Tom and I, we were a little bit in competition with each other early on. He still lives in the Twin Cities, and I still see him occasionally, and he still plays cello. And so, yeah, I definitely had buddies in orchestra. Mm-hmm.
Now, as a kid, I mean, Mike, you know, my kids, you know, Anna, at least,
yes.
You know, they kind of moved around a lot and did a lot of different things when they were young, but they weren't, I guess Elizabeth was focused a little bit on some academic things with, maybe Johns Hopkins or something, but did you find yourself kind of socializing with friends outside of school with non-musician kids, or are you just really focused on music?
No, actually, that was an interesting part of it, because as I was kind of excelling and like moving forward with cello, none of my friends really stuck with it or took it as seriously as I did, and so I eventually in high school, I started MYS, which is the Minnesota Youth Symphony. So I was doing that outside of school. But because I was so shy, I, you know, didn't make a lot of friends at MYS. I kind of kept to myself. It wasn't until I attended a summer camp, a music summer camp, actually on Madeline Island when I was like 15, that I really, like, I met kind of my people. And I was really, I remember being really blown away by that experience.
Just nerded out by that.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, you know, these are people that that I actually have something in common with, but like in all, you know, like that I can kind of picture myself being friends with, but then also we have music in common. So it was kind of like putting the two, kind of colliding my two worlds together for the first time.
Right, right. And kind of measuring yourself, I guess, against people outside of what you were used to, right?
Definitely.
So that was when you were about 15 or so?
And
then where did you go to high school?
I went to South High School.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. It's all coming together here.
It's
all about South. Like Zoe, did you make a PowerPoint presentation for your your parents? So you went to South High, and then they had a music program there too, and they had orchestra.
Yep, they had orchestra, played in orchestra all 4 years. Yeah, the conductor at the time, Lori Hippen, had actually been at my K through 8, my elementary school. So that was awesome to kind of have a familiar face and somebody who I already knew and had already kind of bonded with.
So as you got out of high school, as you get out and you're a cellist, or you really thought that that's what you wanted to pursue in college?
Yeah, it was a very, I kind of remember having this conversation with my parents. It was very brief and very kind of straight to the point. And it was kind of like, well, you know, like, you, well, do you want to go into music? You know, that's an option. And I was kind of like, yeah, I think I do. You know, it was like my teacher at the time kind of pointed out that I had the abilities and I was totally capable and kind of urged me in that direction. And it just made total sense to me. And I kind of had this moment of like, wow, I can actually do that. I can actually like major in cello. Like, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. It's really nice to have some confidence in something when you get out of high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you can actually do some things. So you're looking around at schools and you chose Minnesota because you remembered your Minnesota experience from
grade. Yeah, I actually had a little bit of a different route. I ended up applying to a bunch of different music schools. And, you know, I took 2 weeks and traveled all over and did all my auditions and things. And I actually ended up going to Peabody. Yeah, Peabody Institute in Baltimore, which is a very small little music conservatory. And I went there my freshman year. And that was a kind of interesting experience. You know, it was very, very competitive, kind of a lot of East Coast kids.
I was going to say, really East Coast. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was a little baby 18-year-old, like fresh out of my parents' house. And yeah, I really, really struggled when I was there. I wouldn't, you know, looking back, I think there were a few things about the school that maybe were not totally ideal for me. But my teacher was great. There were things that were great about it. But I just really struggled. I kind of lost a lot of that confidence that I had gained. I think, you know, going from like being at the top of the totem pole and then thrown into like the bottom of the totem pole, you know, and I, it kind of shook me. So yeah, I ended up coming home for the summer and my parents kind of pointed out to me, you know, you don't have to go back if you don't want to. They were paying like loads of money for me to go to this fancy school. And
living in a tent, living in their car.
Yeah, I think as much as they wanted to like support me, they kind of pointed out like, well, if you're miserable. Yeah, I really took that summer and really thought things through. And then following that, I actually ended up taking like a whole year off of playing.
Did you just put the cello in the closet?
I did. I basically did. I was really burnt out. I was kind of, you know, in a little bit of a dark place. I took time off from school and I really just kind of bummed around and like worked in restaurants for a couple years.
Your life with the cello's in the closet. When you took this time off, just a breather possibly from thinking about performing or trying to figure out if the cello was even something that you wanted to get back into, but you decided to pursue it at the University of Minnesota?
Yeah, so I took this time off and then what ended up happening is I got kind of hooked up with this couple, Krista and Jeremy. Jeremy worked at McPhail and anyways, it was like my mom called McPhail to get a string quartet for my sister's wedding. And then somehow she mentioned me. And then this woman, Krista, was like, oh my gosh, I need a cellist for my quartet. And anyways, that's kind of how I got back into it as I started playing chamber music with this couple. And we kind of ended up taking trips up north and playing gigs. And that was really fun. So it kind of sparked my whole love for it again, which was really great. And then kind of slowly getting out of my rut, I was living with my parents after DC, actually, after Anna and I came back from DC. I didn't really have a place to live, so I was really at home. And my parents kind of said to me, all right, you can't live here unless you are in school. So that was kind of the last little like kick in the butt that I needed. And I was kind of like, okay, they're right. I need to go back. I think I'm ready. So I applied to the U. And yeah, that's when it all started.
When you applied at the U, did you apply with the thought that you were going to be just a liberal arts kid, or was it going to be music?
I actually started out doing just taking classes. So I kind of eased into it. I did kind of the continuing ed thing, but I did take lessons. So I didn't kind of jump in full time. I kind of eased into it, started out part time. But then pretty quickly was like, yeah, I want to just continue my performance degree, continue what I was doing before. I was kind of like, I'm ready to go back.
Is it because you saw more opportunities than just doing an orchestra? Is it because you were running around doing some other things, you realized you could do other things? Or?
Yeah, I think it was always in the back of my mind that I was going to go back to school. But I just needed some time to kind of come back around and and feel fully ready. Kind of always knew that was going to happen eventually.
Right. And it did happen, right? I mean, you went four years or so to the U. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And graduated and all of that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So then on graduation, is that when you launched into your, okay, now I've got to make some money and try to figure out how to be a professional cellist?
Yeah. And I'd never taught before. I started teaching kind of late. A lot of musicians like just kind of teach a little bit on the side, even as early as like high school. And I was a little bit intimidated by the fact that I had, you know, not done that. And kind of once I, you know, and I always had the excuse of like, well, I'm in school, I need to focus on school. But once I graduated, I was kind of like, okay, now it's time. I don't have any excuses. So I actually just like got an email from, and you know, this is like mostly how it works. I just got an email from this random person who needed a sub, and they, you know, got my name from someone else. And I came in, and even though I didn't have any teaching experience, they were like, well, we need a sub, and you play cello and you have, you know, your undergrad degree. So
you've
come
been
on
around teachers, yeah.
So yeah, teaching is kind of a funny thing. It's like, you know, as a performer, no one teaches us how to teach, but at the same time, we've been studying this thing like our entire life. So you kind of just get thrown into it and you figure it out along the way. But at least I have the confidence that like, okay, no, I really, really know this thing like inside and out, and I've been doing it my whole life. And so...
And if you get stuck, you just kind of perform for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. Right?
Why don't you just sit there?
Yeah.
Let me show you a couple of things.
Play duet with the student.
So, yeah, but I was going to ask you a lot about that teaching stuff, because I saw that you had some experience with a Suzuki method or whatever. Is that just for your resume, or is that something you were really interested in?
I mean, a little, you know, a little of both. It was, I used, you know, Suzuki is huge, and I used the books when I was little. And there was one summer where a really good friend of mine, who's also a cellist, Audrey, we were friends at the U, and we kind of talked about, there was a program in Chicago over the summer to get this teaching certificate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it cost kind of a lot of money at the time for us to go, but I managed to save up the money and we went together. I think kind of deciding that we were going to do it together made it a really great experience.
Chicago.
So yeah, that was a 2-week thing. It was really fun and I learned a lot and I really liked it. And yeah, I mean, there's, you know, certificates kind of, there are like 10 Suzuki books or something, like 10 levels. And you can, you know, people get their certificate in all different instruments. And so that is kind of always there to continue if I wanted to. So I've definitely thought about doing more.
So you've been doing that for what, 4 years, 4 or 5 years, teaching individual lessons, all ages of kids?
Yeah, I have taught as young as like four or five.
Yeah.
And then I've taught like 70-year-olds, you know, so it's, I don't really have a limit. I actually have taught a lot of adult students. So yeah, and I've, you know, I've taught for a while. I had a job in at Yinghua Academy, which is a Chinese immersion school. So I was doing group classes for a period of time too, and teaching fourth graders and doing orchestra sectionals. And so yeah, I kind of dove right into the teaching thing.
So what kind of things, if you're to say, or somebody to say, you know, you should call Rosa as a teacher. She does this with kids. What is it that you really try to emphasize with beginners or people coming into music? Get an instrument, maybe.
Yeah, get an instrument. You know, it's a lot of the beginning is just kind of coordination and getting comfortable, like handling the instrument itself. And it can be a little overwhelming just with kind of the whole like learning how to read music aspect of it too. So it's,
right,
you know, usually I don't start with music right away. We spend a lot of time just with the instrument itself. Yeah. And just it's hard for the really little ones. It's hard. The holding the bow is particularly challenging. But yeah, it takes a lot of patience. I think for the cello, it's the beginning takes a lot of patience, and it's kind of a big hump that you have to get over. But then once you get to a certain level, it's very rewarding and kids are very, very excited. So
you tell the kids that you were four or five when you started, six when you started. Yeah, I bet. The lessons are from what, half an hour to an hour to 2 hours?
Most of my lessons I do are 30 minutes. I have some 45 minute lessons, but yeah, I don't currently have any hour long lessons.
Can you do it remotely? Just thinking about the pandemic, is that a possibility? Or
yeah, I've been teaching over Skype. I've been taking my own lessons with my teacher at the U over Skype.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not ideal, but it's definitely doable.
Right.
So
does it lend itself to more specific things than it does? I don't know. I suppose you can, technique wise, you can say, well, here's what I've got. And,
I would say the hardest thing about it is that we can't really play together. So, you know, I can demonstrate something, but, you know, it's just, we can't do duets. We can't, that's a lot of what I did with students, because playing music with other people is really fun. And it's something I think that really inspires people, but that's a huge, huge bummer. It's, you know, it's just kind of impossible to like hear the other person while you're playing yourself over Skype. You know?
Right. Well, in these past 4 years outside of doing lessons for money, you've also been performing.
Right.
And you have a variety of experiences there because you're a part of a couple groups, right? Do you want to tell us what they are? Roma Duo, is that one of them?
Yes, Roma Duo is my, it's me and a violinist.
You still perform, and that's for the money as well as probably social end of things. Can you tell us a little bit about everything from Roma Duo to the quartet you're a part of to other things?
Yes. So I met Mary Alice at the U. We were there together for our undergrad, and yeah, she's a violinist, and we played chamber music together in school. And then, you know, we became good friends, and we really worked well together. So after graduating, I was like, hey, we should like really do this and commit to this, and, you know, make a website and become a group and do the whole thing. And so we did. We are Roma Duo, and we mostly do just a lot of weddings and like special events, and we really worked hard at setting that whole thing up to make it easy for ourselves. We have, you know, these massive binders with loads and loads of music, and we just bring them to every wedding gig, and we can kind of just open up our binders and do it. And it's like, you know, we can do it with our eyes closed at this point.
What an advantage, because you can do that. And I know as a layperson, I listen to people like yourselves do that. And I go, oh, they just rehearsed the heck out of this.
Yeah, well, we have over time, you know.
Yeah, I think so. But it's just, yeah, you've got the secret sauce. And I don't. Yeah, no, it's cool. So you've been around the metro, around Minneapolis-St. Paul, doing that for the most part?
Yeah. So we've gone to like Duluth and Rochester, and we travel a little bit here and there. But yeah, that's kind of mostly just the surrounding area.
Oh, how about the quartet? Do you work with them as well? Yeah,
the quartet, that's also kind of same type of thing. The other two women in the quartet, one of them, Erica, I also met through school. The other person, Aubrey, teaches at the mm-hmm. same school that I teach at. So we actually, all four of us now teach at the same school. So that quartet was kind of a little bit more recent development, but I really enjoyed them as well. And then, you know, I play a lot of just kind of random gigs on top of that. So church gigs, I will occasionally like do recording sessions, playing for bands, things like that.
How do you find those, or people, is it by word of mouth at this point?
Yeah. You know, there was, at this point, it's just word of mouth. There was a period mm-hmm. where I think I really had to put myself out there, and I really mm-hmm. had to like network and reach out and connect to people.
Right.
But over time you kind of make a name for yourself, and now the gigs kind of just come, and I'm like very, very grateful for that. And I've done some, you know, like bigger venues, like played at the Target Center and the XL, and mm-hmm. you know, I played with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And
what is that? I didn't have time to look that up. The trans, because I've been on the Trans-Siberian train, so
yeah,
I was kind of curious about it. Yeah.
So they do like a Christmas tour every year. They're famous for their like Christmas tour. And it's
Are they Russians?
Yeah, I believe they are. And they take like Christmas music and they play like, make like rock tunes out of them, basically.
Oh, okay.
And there's lots of pyro, and there's lots of like, you know, flashiness, and it's uh-huh. it's quite the show. Yeah.
You have to wear different clothes, or are you dressed up like elves? What do you
they encourage, you know, we wear black, but they encourage like you know, flashy, like provocative, like show as much skin as you want, like do the whole rock and roll thing. So
that's fun. Yeah, that's crazy.
But on top of all that, I also play in an orchestra, so
it's a little different. Yeah, that's a little different vibe.
A little different. Yeah, right out of college, I didn't do the orchestra thing right away. And then after a little while, I was like, wow, I've been playing in orchestras like my entire life, and I really miss this mm-hmm. this part of playing. And so I auditioned. There was an audition that came up with the Rochester Symphony in Rochester, Minnesota. And I took the audition, and I got it. So I've been sitting assistant principal in Rochester for the past couple of years now, and that's, you know, despite the commute is, you know, it's not terrible, not great, but I really like playing with the group, so it's well worth it.
Does that involve some rehearsals as well?
Yeah, so usually they'll do kind of between the months of like October and April, they'll do about a show every month, and it's usually kind of either one or two Sunday evening rehearsals, and then there'll be like a Wednesday and then Friday dress rehearsal, and then Saturday, Sunday concert.
How does that work as a professional musician? Are you given, you're given what you're about to play, you rehearse it together. Do you take that music home and practice that on your own, or you just kind of leave it at the door?
Yeah, they mail me the music usually, you know, a couple weeks or if, you know, our concerts, sometimes they're a little bit closer together. So like they'll hand us the music for the next concert, you know, at our last concert of the previous show or something. So we do have time, and we have it at home, and we can do our own preparations so that when we show up at rehearsal, we kind of can just be as productive as possible.
Right. Is that the kind of music that you prefer to play? If you had your way with music, playing music, would you just as soon be in an orchestra as opposed to the other things, or do you enjoy the other things as well?
I do enjoy the other things, although, yeah, I think orchestra would be kind of an ideal, like, main gig, but, you know, even top orchestras, they do lots of kind of smaller chamber stuff and other unique playing situations, so...
Right.
I know that there always is going to be that variety in my world, which I, you know, I'm okay with. So
you like that, yeah, yeah. Did you play for you played for the Minnesota Opera on occasion as well?
Yes, I did. That was another audition that I took kind of right after graduation from my undergrad. Yeah. And I've played one show with them, so I'm on the sub list. So, you know, it's kind of a mystery, like how many people are on the sub list, when are going to get called. But that was definitely one of like the highlights of my performing career so far. That was really, really incredible. Kind of one of the highest caliber gigs I've had so far. So,
is it something that you have to keep knocking on the door to find out what's going on, or you just kind of let them call you? Or
yeah, I'm not sure if the knocking on the door does really any good.
Okay.
They kind of just say, yep, we will call you when we need you. So.
Okay. All right. Well, the Rochester thing is an orchestra. The opera was, you really thought that was terrific. That was fun. Yeah. You do some lessons, you do these other gigs, and you're also going to the University of Minnesota. Now, why the graduate degree at this point? It seems like you're really busy with other things.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of just hit a point of, do I want to kind of keep doing what I'm doing right now forever? Or do I want to try to push myself further? And I kind of just figured, you know, if I can get a graduate degree and it's not going to put me in crazy amounts of debt, then why not? You know, that was kind of my thought. And I know that's like a huge privilege to even say that, like, why not just go get a graduate degree? But you know, being here and having the U and having, you know, the teacher there who I had a really awesome relationship with, Tanya, and who I love. And she, you know, was really enthusiastic when I wanted to come back and was like, yes, please come back. So yeah, it just kind of in my mind was like a no-brainer.
Well, that's great. And also that continue the word of mouth thing, right? If you're around music like that, there's other things that pop up.
A lot of this too is just like experience, like playing music and learning music and just kind of expanding my repertoire, basically. That's a huge part. Right.
So technically, as a cellist, I mean, what are the most difficult things for a cellist to do? Just to do things quickly or to do things tonally? I don't know where the challenges are. I know where my challenges would be, but
like with
for you, what do you think the challenges are as far as a cello is concerned? What would you like to be better at?
In terms of playing or in terms of just kind of the whole job?
I don't know. Well, let's think just about playing, just get technical for a few seconds here. Just what would you like to be able to do?
I mean, I am always kind of on the technical end of things. I can always be better and I can always kind of beef up my technical skills, I guess. You know, a lot of at this point, what it kind of feels like is, it really feels like being an athlete, because it's like training your muscles and it's, you know, being careful not to injure yourself. And we really have to take care of our bodies. I mean, it's like very, very physical. So yeah, right now I'm really trying to kind of take this whole quarantine situation and take advantage of like being able to practice every day and being able to just like be really consistent.
Right.
That's what it takes to kind of, you know, like thinking about an athlete, like they have to train and they have to, you know, work out every day and do their whatever they do. It's the same exact thing with musicians.
Yeah, we spoke about that a little bit, I think last summer or maybe a little longer. I talked to you a little bit about the physicality of mm-hmm. playing professionally. I'm sure it is a challenge. And if you are at the U and get this graduate degree, is that a 2-year thing or is 3-year? Are you going to be done with that in a year or two? Or
2 years. So this is my first year that I'm just about to finish. Yeah, and then I'll have one more year.
Would that put you into a place where you could maybe teach at a post-high school level somewhere?
Yes. Yeah,
or it does. Are you there? Are you there already? I don't know.
It would take a graduate degree. Yeah. So okay. that is an option, but also I'm kind of bottom line. I'm hoping to just really get better at playing, and I hope to kind of take more auditions and hopefully, yeah, kind of continue to climb the ladder and kind of get a position in an ensemble in an orchestra. So
yeah, so when the call comes out, you're ready to go.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In terms of, we haven't talked at all about geography. Sometimes in this stuff, I talk about personal geographies, and I'm thinking that for you, Minnesota is kind of where you want to be. Or are you open to anything?
I have gone back and forth about that in my mind a lot. It's a hard call because I have become like very rooted here, and you know, so much of being a freelance musician is just making those connections and, you know, building like a reputation. And so it's a little scary, the idea of moving somewhere and just having to start completely fresh.
Right.
Plus, you know, I have my entire family here. I mean, my community, even outside of music, is very strong and important to me. But on the other hand, I would like to think that if an audition comes up somewhere else, you know, why not take it? And there are also tons of benefits of starting somewhere new and kind of broadening that network. So I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? Well, on the last question I have for you, as far as spaces are concerned, given the noise that is around you, I was trying to think of, you know, for you, what would you call like your most advantageous personal professional space? Is it a practice room when you think about music? Is it an orchestra hall? Is it playing in a Trans-Siberian thing at XL Center? I mean, where do you really love to play music and listen to music?
You know, I think playing in an orchestra just ultimately has a really, really special kind of thrill to it. You know, so solo playing like in a concert hall is very exciting, but it's very, very, you're very, very exposed. So it can be very scary, so very intimidating. I mean, that's great too, but there's something about playing in an orchestra to be like a part of this thing that's bigger than you. And just that feeling of like playing that first note together. And like, in particular, I remember when I had taken my break from playing, and I, you know, hadn't played in a long time, and then I went back to the U. I remember like the first time my first rehearsal with the orchestra there, and the first time, because when you're playing with a new group, like you don't know what to expect. You don't know how it's going to sound. You don't know the level of players. And so I really remember like playing that first note with the U of M orchestra, and just had this like immediate feeling of like, oh my God, this is like so incredible. This is exactly where I want to be. I've missed this so much.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, that's a great note, as they say in the music business, to end on. Rosa, I want to thank you for talking to me today a little bit about what you're doing as a millennial woman in St. Paul, Minnesota. And, I appreciate the work, that the artistry that you add to the world. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun chatting with you.
I want to thank Rosa for her time and her joy of playing and teaching the cello for the rest of us.
COVID-19 has made her scheduling of her work life, teaching or performing, more difficult, especially with the Rochester Symphony being unable to perform publicly. But she is currently continuing to do weddings, various outdoor performances with other artists and ensembles, and is currently enrolled in her second year of graduate work with the cello at the University of Minnesota. Thanks again for listening. This is Thinking It Through.